This is Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence, your 8:03 tee time every Sunday morning right here on ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM. Let's join your host, Matthew Lawrence, for Backspin Golf.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to Backspin Golf. We've had some actual weather where we could play golf. It's almost unheard of around here in the recent past, but we hope this keeps going for a while, whenever it is that it's not raining anymore. I've been looking forward to this for 2 or 3 weeks now. This conversation I'm about to have with my dear friend, Joe Barrows. He was on Backspin, in case you missed it, a couple weeks ago, talking about Aronimink Golf Course, where, of course, the PGA Championship was just played. Joe is a font of knowledge. How about that? About... Yeah. Golf courses and architecture, and he's just, excuse me, Joe, while I say things about you, he's just an amazing guy. And he had an idea that we should talk about some of the top 100 golf courses, maybe, that we've either played or walked, or just a discussion about architecture and things like that. And I said, we're doing it. And here we are a couple weeks later. And on the line with me now is my friend, Joe Barrows. Hi, Joe.
Morning. Don't stop. I was okay.
I was getting
my wife to have her hear how good I was. So
that,
anyway.
There's plenty more I could say. Believe me.
Well, all right.
Okay. This is so interesting to me, because when we were trying to figure out how we were going to do this, I said to you, just pick a list of the top 100. We're not going to get to all 100. We'll try to get to most of the top 50 that we've been to. I said, and just tell me which list you were looking at. And Joe told me, top 100 courses in the U.S. from Golf Magazine. And we know different places have different lists. So I said, okay, great. And then Joe, one of the things that makes him so amazing is he went through the list and circled the courses he's walked or been to for a golf tournament and put a P next to the ones he's played. And I was supposed to do the same, except Joe has made notes on this list that are unbelievable. The course, the architect, the location, the date opened, a list of the top courses in Kentucky, and top courses that were left off the top 100 list that shouldn't have been. And I agree with those ones too, Joe. So where would you like to start, Joe? Here's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to say to start that I have played, I'm incredibly blessed in my life. I have played 10 of the top 50 courses in the United States. And just going through the list brought back memories.
Yeah, so I thought I'd give you sort of why this even crossed my mind to do this anyway. I sort of imagined a course challenge. You know, I'll play Pebble Beach, and you'll say, well, I'll call Pebble Beach, and and maybe that'll
okay. We could do
like that.
That.
Yeah, but the whole thing started with me, probably back in the year 2000. Now, this, playing or seeing all the top 100 courses, this wasn't some kind of bucket list that I've been doing all my life.
Right.
It really kind of started. And you'll appreciate this because I think you're a 1950 baby as well.
I am.
The year 2000, the four majors, obviously Augusta and the Masters, but the PGA, which was played in, next would have been the U.S. Open. It was played out at Pebble Beach in the year 2000. That's the year Tiger, you know, lapped the field.
Right.
Then the Open Championship was played at St. Andrews.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally the PGA was played at Valhalla. And I thought, you know, 50 years ago, I was born in Monterey, California, Pacific Grove, specifically Fort Ord.
Wow.
While my dad was still in the Navy after the war. So I said, that counts, you know, in the big scheme of things, that accounts for, you know, why I'm interested or I like golf. So I said, what I need, circle of life kind of thing, is I need to go to all four of the majors the year I turned 50. I didn't make but two of them. One of them was at Pebble Beach, and the other one was Valhalla, which was just in Louisville. Mm-hmm. And so how I got to a different story, but convinced my wife, who's not a golfer, although she appreciates it now, that we should go to Pebble Beach for all these, you know, circle of life kind of reasons. And we went. I said, if you go out to Pebble Beach with me, we'll go watch the practice round on Wednesday. We'll walk the course. We took photographs. It was great. The next day, the tournament's going on. And about 4 in the afternoon, the marine layer comes in.
Yeah.
It's really clouds and about 20 feet over your head. It's that low.
Yeah.
They call it off. You know? And so the next day, we're going to go to the tournament. That makes it Friday. And I promised her, we'll go back to San Francisco. So you can have, you know, we go out to a nice dinner in San Francisco. That'll be your treat. And she fell in love with Pebble Beach so much, she said, in a polite word or two, forget San Francisco. We're staying here. We're going to go watch the tournament at Pebble Beach for as long as we can. So we'd stayed in St. Cruz, which was about an hour north. And so we drove down every day, took the shuttle into the course. Anyway, so that sort of got me thinking about this. And so periodically since then, we'll pick a place to go and a tournament to go see. And she's bought in. She likes going to the tournament and understands, you know, our modus operandi going on Wednesday with practice round so you can see the course.
Right.
And then Thursday, and then get home by Sunday so you can watch the final round. So anyway, that's my Pebble Beach story, is how the whole thing got started. And that particular Pebble Beach event, I said, was the year Tiger lapped the field in 2000. He had not won the Masters, but he did win at St. Andrews, and then he won at Valhalla, if you remember, in a playoff over Bob May.
Yep.
And then the following thing was when he won the Masters, so they gave him the Tiger Slam.
Right.
Anyway, I didn't go to watch Tiger. I went because my generation of golfers, whether Jack Nicklaus or Tom Watson, who was my favorite probably at the time, this was Jack Nicklaus's last U.S. Open. And I was in the stands when he played his last U.S. Open hole.
18. Wow.
He didn't make the cut. So the second round. And it was fun because I had snuck in a camera. You're not allowed to take them, but I had one of these box cameras, you know, that you can take pictures with. And anyway, so here he comes up 18, and the crowd starts murmuring because he's hit a good drive, and those with glasses, binoculars, would start murmuring because they could see that he'd pulled out his three wood.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going in two, and the whole time I was there, nobody had hit it on in two, except one other, maybe Glenn Day might have been. Anyway, so he hits it on in two. It rolls up. There's a bunker short right on the right side. It misses that bunker and rolls on to the green. And so the crowd goes wild. He's on in two. Well, he proceeded to three putt for par, but didn't make his birdie. But that's not important. I feel like it was watching Jack Nicklaus play his last hole in his Open career was a good story. Okay, so
it is.
So anyway, shortly after that, I got a few years later an opportunity to play it, and it's pretty costly, and was even, you know, when I played.
Oh, yeah.
Because my wife had been there and seen it, she absolutely, no, you know, absolutely, you got to play it. Go do it, you know. And I've been in San Francisco at a conference and rode down and played Pebble Beach, and my memory of Pebble Beach was enhanced, I'll say. I pardon the first course. That made things good. But my memory of the course itself was the greens.
Yeah.
Which are poana, but a strain of poana, not like around here. If you get poana in your greens around here, it's a bad thing. But
right.
The greens are poana. So all day long, what happened to me was if I read a putt that I thought would break to the right, and the caddy would say, no, that was that's straight. Well, all day long, what I thought I saw and what he saw were two different things, except that every time I followed what I thought was correct, his advice was right. And every time I followed his advice, I was right.
Yep.
I never made a putt all day. Made a putt all day. All right, but so you've been to Pebble Beach. Surely you've got a Pebble Beach story.
By the way, Pebble Beach is number 9 on this list of top 100. I do have Pebble Beach. Let me just preface this by saying almost every course on this list that I have played, not almost, every one, was the result of my acting career. I was invited to play at either a celebrity golf tournament or I met somebody. For example, this is how I played Pebble because I lived in LA for 20 years. I was invited to play in a celebrity tournament at Spyglass 1 year. And I went up and got very friendly with the head pro at Spyglass. And he introduced me to the head pro at Spanish Bay there. And over the years, when I wanted to go or I wanted to take somebody, I used to go with my friend Andrew McCarthy all the time, I would call Richie at Spanish Bay and we would drive up from LA and we'd play Spanish Bay and stay there. And then I would go to Pebble the next morning and play there. And that the whole Monterey Peninsula, this will take me real quick to the number 2 course on this list, which you have walked, but I actually got to play Cypress Point 3 separate times, 3 different occasions. And
All right, the contest is over, you win.
Okay. That's funny. This is this contest, so-called contest.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I quit. Yeah,
no, okay. All right. Well, but let's talk more about the courses that what of the 50 that we have on here. And I'm just going to read these off. You have walked Cypress Point, Shinnecock, which I grew up on Long Island, didn't play golf when I lived there, so I never made it to Shinnecock. We've both been to Augusta, Pebble Beach. I have played Los Angeles. You have walked, and I have played Pinehurst number 2. I've played Riviera. You've walked Seminole in Florida.
No, I've played Seminole.
Seminole, right.
Yeah.
Right.
I've played Seminole and Peachtree. Those two are my trump cards. I was going to trump in with Seminole and Peachtree.
Yeah, got me there. Okay, you win those. But right after Seminole at number 17, Oakland Hills at number 20. I have played Oakland Hills. And you'll love this. Not only did I play Oakland Hills, I played it with Billy Casper, of all people. And it was one of the great days of my life, on a golf course or not, was spending an entire day with Billy Casper. It was amazing, Joe. It was amazing.
I have no doubt of that. One of the probably underappreciated golfers in the history of golf in terms of his record and his accomplishments.
His name is never brought up with all the other greats.
He's arguably Nicholas Palmer and Casper, as well as Gary Player, but he would have been the fourth out of
Yeah.
In that time frame. Oakland Hills, I didn't put down because I have been there. My best friend's daughter got married there, not last year, but year before last, in Birmingham Hills or in that area, Bloomfield Hills, I forget exactly. And while I was there at the wedding, I ran into a fellow who was a member, and I said, can I come out and look at the course? And he said, sure. I went out there and was nobody around. The clubhouse had burned down at Oakland Hills a few years ago. They've now got it restored and back up and going. But so I was going to count that as someplace I'd been to, but I really just got out and walked around the parking lot down the 18th. So it doesn't compare to playing it, and particularly with Billy Casper. So my walking course, Cypress, walked last year when the Walker Cup was out there. We went out there just again to look at the golf course, my wife and I and daughter. And Shinnecock is really, I haven't walked it yet, but in 2 weeks, that's where I'm going to be. I'm going to spend a little few days in the Hamptons. Summer in the Hamptons.
So nice.
I'm going to be at Shinnecock. I'm going to be at Shinnecock on Wednesday and Thursday. Hopefully back home to watch the final round on Sunday. But anyway, they're making me, when I say they, it's my wife and daughter, they're making me go into New York City and go to a play, I think, like on Friday or Saturday or something. So I don't know. But I've been in New York City. As traveled and as worldly as I am, I've never been to New York City. So
that's amazing to me. And if you need any tips, don't call me, because I haven't been there in a long time.
So what I discovered when I was looking at these top ratings is that, as you said, Golf Magazine will do one, Golf Week will do one, Golf Digest mm-hmm. will do one, and they're all, if you took the top 25 off each of them, they're all going to be virtually the same, okay? And there's that sort of unanimity. And then what I've discovered, though, is once you get down to about 60 or 70, there are a bunch of them I've never even heard of. Okay.
Me too. I'm
not nearly the expert that you have held me out to be, but wow. That's why I wanted to see. I said, sort of just how many of these, have you seen or have you walked and have you played? So the ones I have down, let me just read the first 10 or 15, so people know. Pine Valley. If you pulled out Pine Valley as your first card,
the call would have been over. Yeah.
Yeah, it was over. Yeah, I was tossed in. I don't know if anybody's been to Pine Valley. All right, so Cypress Point, we've talked about. Shinnecock Hills is 3. So National Golf Links of America is out there on Long Island, right beside Shinnecock, and it is a 1911 course when it opened, and C.B. McDonald, who also did Shinnecock Hills, was the architect there.
Right.
So 5 was Oakmont, which is in Pittsburgh, I'll say it. 6 was mm-hmm. Augusta National. 7, I didn't know this. This is in the first 20 or 25. It's the only one that's a modern course. Sandhill.
Amazing.
Is in Nebraska, and that's a Coor Crenshaw.
Yeah.
Design. Marion East, which is another northeastern course near Philadelphia, I guess, Ardmore.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about Pebble Beach. Here's the thing about Pebble Beach, and I say Oakmont, and even Pine Valley. They're all designed by people you've never heard of before. And if you go down the list of famous golf course architects from the early days, you'll hear, it'll be Ross and Tillinghast and McDonald.
Right.
McKenzie, but you've never heard of probably Jack Neville and Douglas Grant. They did Pebble Beach.
I don't
know if you'll find.
I never knew that. That is amazing to me.
Yeah, and you will see their name maybe one other course somewhere mm-hmm. in California.
Yeah.
But so a guy named Founes, Fownes, did Oakmont. It was his course. Yeah, mm-hmm. He designed his own course. Built it. And so there are a few examples of these great courses where you have no clue who the person is that did it. And anyway, your Riviera and L.A. Country Club and Bel Air was the trifecta from George Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a William Bell, I think, but he got a thing going there in Los Angeles and created some spectacular golf courses.
Yes,
there.
He did. Yeah.
So L.A. North is a George Thomas course. That's number 10. Fisher's Island, which is a New York course. And this is by a guy named Seth Rayner. If you go back and look at a lot of the courses in the Golden Age, Seth Rayner is not necessarily well known, but he did a bunch, and he did a bunch of good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago, number 12, Chicago, that's C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner. Pinehurst, number 2, is number 13, and that's Donald Ross, of course. Donald Ross did over 400 courses.
Yes, he did.
If you go down and look at the top 200, in the way Golf Week does their ratings, they divide it between classic courses and modern courses. And the mm-hmm. cutoff is 1960 is the cutoff year. Pre-1960 are classic courses. And I think you and I would agree. We belong to the classic age, don't we? 1950, when we were created.
Yes.
So that makes sense. Yeah. Anything 100%. After 1960, yeah, is a modern course.
Yeah.
And Donald Ross, 400 courses plus. There was actually more than that. He also was the first one to take the sand greens that were covered with oil. That's the way they used to be in the South, and was introduced turf to the mm-hmm. greens.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Riviera was 14. Friar's Head, that's in New York as well. Bunch of good courses in New York and Philadelphia, I mean, in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, the
yes,
Northeast is loaded.
There are.
And anyway, so a little unknown fact, we've got a Donald Ross course in Lexington.
Yes, we do.
Idlewild Country Club in Lexington is a Donald Ross course.
Yes, we do. Exactly
right.
Right. All right, we only got a minute left or so, Joe, and I think we're going to need to revisit this again because obviously there are a lot of places we didn't get to talk about.
I mentioned my Nicklaus sighting. I've got a Palmer sighting where I almost knocked Arnold Palmer out by spelling the ball in his direction. And you'll want to hear that one, I think.
Oh, boy, do I.
And I was there in another Tiger sighting in 2019 when he won his final major, Augusta. So there's a story there.
We have a lot of stories.
We can do part two if the feedback comes in and people go, well, that wasn't too bad. Well, then we try it again.
First
but
of all,
you're the determined.
Yeah, I'm the determining factor, and I could tell you the feedback is fantastic already. So, okay, we will get to a part two very soon. Thanks so
All
much,
right.
Joe. You're the greatest.
Hey, Matthew, I enjoy every time we get together and chat. It's
me too.
It's fun.
Me too.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
See you.
Take care.
You
All
too.
Right.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.
Welcome back. It's been too long, but my friend Jordan Perez of No Laying Up has been missing from Backspin Golf for a little while. We were on hiatus for a long time, and I just said I need to talk to her because, frankly, hold on a minute, Jordan. I'll get to you in a second. Frankly, I talk a lot about how I don't enjoy watching the PGA Tour that much anymore. What I do love is amateur golf and the LPGA and just women's golf in general. And there's nobody better in my mind to talk to about that than Jordan. Hello, Jordan.
Honored to be back. What's up? Yeah. amateur and women's golf, we're hitting peak season over here. So it's perfect time to come on and chat.
Boy, are we ever. Wednesday, I sat and watched, I don't even know how competitive it was, but for the first nine holes or so, I watched almost the entire final day, the championship round of the NCAA tournaments, which Stanford won, beating USC. So I just want to get this Stanford team and program is truly remarkable. So just to start off with your general thoughts about Stanford.
We feel like broken records saying that the Stanford program is remarkable, because truthfully, we've been saying that for the past like 5 years, give or take, but somehow they've managed to up the ante every single year. And I struggle to really understand how, other than the fact that Ann Walker is just leaps and bounds out recruiting everybody in college golf. And she was quoted by Brently Romine in a really interesting article that he wrote following NCAAs. She said, "If I never had to coach another group of players and I just coached into the sunset, it'd be the greatest job on earth." And that just speaks to how talented this particular group is. And I think in the past, we saw players, particularly standout players like Rose Zhang, Rachel Heck, and a lot of that talent was more or less condensed to them, and they had great support behind them, no doubt. But this time, everybody is good. I mean, we had in this NCAA championship match, we had all Stanford players, and then two of the players from USC. 7 out of the 20 best players in the world were in an NCAA championship match. And for people who aren't as familiar, that's very unheard of. It's not normal to have so many good players in an NCAA championship match, just based on odds, just based on roster construction, just based on a lot of factors. And so to see so many players on one team play so well that could theoretically be the best players on any team in college golf is just, it's crazy. And somehow they've managed to win a third national title in 5 years, and almost won one last year again. So that would have been 4 out of 5, but I just, they've done it again. And it's amazing to watch such a dynasty be created. I would love a formidable challenger to come up. And USC, no doubt, they're no scrubs. They're an incredible team on their own as well. It's just Stanford is in another league compared to the rest of the NCAA. I have this thought in my head about a lot of this discourse about the SEC wanting to break away from everybody. Like, maybe Stanford women's golf should break away from everybody.
There you go. There you go. I love that. And I'm going to use that on my daily show. I'm just telling you, I'm stealing that. It's that team is so stacked that they kept talking about Mega Gane, who is in these pressure situations, wherever she has played, is unreal. And she even talked about the fact that she could be the number 5 player on. There are 2 players that didn't even play in the championship match, and she talked about them and said they'd be in the top 5 on every other team in the country. That's how deep they were.
It's truly, it's tough to wrap your mind around. And that's coming from Mega Gane, the reigning U.S. women's amateur champion, and among various other accomplishments. And it's interesting because she came into the team young. She was the low am off the U.S. Women's Open when she came to Stanford, but it would be difficult to say she was unproven, but she wasn't as proven as her predecessors, like Rose, like Rachel. And she comes out and ends up leading the best team that they have historically ever seen. And that is a credit to her leadership, just how good of a college golf player she was. I mean, she went 9-2 in her match play career, which is extremely hard to do. When I think of someone of the caliber of Mega Gane, it's she will go down as probably one of the best college players to ever do it. And to her credit, she ended up earning her Epson Tour card this past week through the LPGA's LCAP program, and actually we'll get into the final round of Q Series. So with the LPGA's qualifying series, so essentially she gets to basically skip the first 2 stages, plays the final round, and has a nice boost in the journey to getting her LPGA card. So
I'm betting on her.
Well deserved.
I'm betting on her.
Bet the house.
There's something else, and this is the kind of thing we're talking about. I'm not sure if is it Maya or Meja?
Maya.
Maya. Okay. Ortengren, who I watched that match, and when I turned it on, it was fairly early. She ended up winning her match 6-5. And for those of you listening who don't understand match play, that means she was 6 holes ahead with 5 poles to play. That's how you win 6-5. It means the match is over early. And she had played pretty badly during the individual title, which was earlier. And then the last 2 days, she beat Jasmine Koo, who I loved watching her play, too, for USC. 6-5 in the on the final day. I mean, that's, first of all, it's golf. But just watching each one of them play was such a treat for me. A treat. Really a treat.
Absolutely. I mean, Maya got a really good feel for the greens, I feel like, in that last day.
Boy,
and
she
I
made a ton of long putts, too.
Yes, yes, just incredible. And I think when you go back to her performance at Anwa specifically, she went into that final round in contention. Mm-hmm. And we were all thinking like, okay, this could really be her. I mean, it was between her, asterisk, and Maria Jose Marin, and ultimately Maria Jose Marin wins, but Maya was in there for a little bit and she ended up shooting 74 in that final round and kind of took herself completely out of it pretty quickly. And I think partly because that was just her having to deal with Augusta greens. And so I think that learning experience taught her a lot. Mm-hmm. When we see Maya, a lot of times she is either very on and it's just absolutely electric, or she has these pretty intense lows. And but the thing about Maya is she rebounds very quickly. She knows where she's making her mistakes. She corrects them quickly, and that's what she did in that final day at NCAAs. And no doubt playing one of the best players in the world in Jasmine Koo as well. I mean, 13th best player in the world, Curtis Cooper, is a standout player at USC in her own right. And so it just to win 6-5, to lead the charge, to have the biggest deficit on your team that day to help clinch a national title is just is remarkable as well.
Yep. And it even worked out perfectly that the winning putt, this little par putt tapped in, was by Meja Gani to clinch for them. But here's something else I wanted to ask you about. I love talking about this stuff with you. In the semifinals, we had a team in this NCAA championship that on my daily show, I said, is one of the great sports stories of the year in any sport. The team from Eastern Michigan, who 2 years earlier were the number 200 ranked school in the NCAAs, made it to the semifinals of the championship this year and lost to Stanford. That story, can you talk for a minute about Eastern Michigan? Because that story, that's amazing.
They're just an absolutely incredible story and very much the feel-good Cinderella story that I feel like we needed. You just don't see this often in women's college golf. And, you know, with NIL and a lot of fundraising and boosting around college golf, not just for EMU, it's incredible to see them actually make the most of it and recruit well and coach well. I mean, Josh Brewer, so he was the former head coach at Georgia for Georgia women's golf, mm-hmm. Came over, started coaching that Eastern Michigan team. And one of his top recruits, top players, Savannah DeBock, follows him to Eastern Michigan, and they start building this incredible program. Two standout transfers, Janae and Jasmine Leovao, played some incredible golf for him as well. And they just jolted up the rankings these past few years. It's remarkable to see a program kind of come from the ground up, and they just make history. And to lose to Stanford in the semifinal, by the way, that's validating. That tells you you're doing everything right. Because to come up against the juggernaut like Stanford, and to be able to go toe to toe with them
Yeah.
is still a credit to the work that they've done. And that's not the last we're going to see of Eastern Michigan. I mean, they will continue to recruit well. They will continue to make the most out of what they have and keep setting a really impressive standard. And I hope for other mid-majors out there, I hope they're able to see that, whether they get a big boost from donors or some donor comes in inspired and wants to transform a program. I hope we see more of that. I really would love to see the le playing field continue to be a little more leveled by this. And so NIL, for all the things that it is, it can be democratizing, and that's just what we saw here.
You know, it's so great what you're saying. And it also, as I'm listening to you talk and hearing myself talk about Eastern Michigan, you never hear about this, the transfer stuff in golf, really. Most of these schools, especially on the women's side, they're homegrown, they recruit, they get these players, the top programs. All we hear about is the transfer portal with basketball and with football and this and NIL and all. But with golf, to hear him talk, the interview with that coach, with that guy, his joy, he didn't care. Of course he cared. He didn't care that he lost to Stanford in the semifinal. His overwhelming joy for his ladies was just the best. Just talking about it makes me happy, as opposed to dropping F-bombs at the TV when I watch the PGA Tour now and all the live stuff and all of it. I mean, and how great for you that you get to cover it the way you do. By the way, you're with No Laying Up, but mostly on the newsletter side of
That's
it,
correct.
which is still fantastic. Anyway, all right. We have a couple of minutes left. Quick thoughts, maybe LPGA. Anything going around in your head about the LPGA?
Yeah, so we are headed into probably the most exciting week of the season, which is the US Women's Open, and
Yeah.
we're at a historical venue, Riviera Country Club.
Yes.
So excited for that. I am so interested to see how the course plays for the women. I think they will absolutely, I think it will be a test, no doubt, especially it is the USGA and it is a great venue. But I
Yeah.
think you'll see a lot of great things about the women's game come out this week, specifically, I think on some of those par fours, some of those really standard signature par fours at Riviera. A lot of people looking to Nelly Korda, of course, someone else you can bet the house on,
Yeah.
just on an absolute tear right now. Probably playing some of the best golf in her entire career, to be honest.
Yeah.
She leads in every statistical category right now on the LPGA. And Gino Tinicum still searching for that first major. That's another big storyline coming into this week. And yeah, I'm very excited to see just which kind of champion Riviera produces. I think
Yeah.
the women's game in particular has been really interesting in that the past few years, I feel like we've seen so much parity when it comes to major champions that I wonder, someone coming out of Riviera, like what that will reveal, if that's someone that is among the top 10, top 20 in the world, or if that's going to be just someone that kind of comes out of the woodwork. But that's the beauty of the US Women's Open.
Oh,
It's
yeah.
it, there are just so many different qualifiers, so many stories, so many possibilities. It's going to be a great week.
Well, I can say, and I said it earlier on this show on Backspin Golf, I've been very blessed. I've played Riviera a number of times. And that golf course, when you win, whoever wins this US Open, it's almost the same thing as Ronnemy with the men. Aaron Rodgers, if you win that championship on that golf course, you deserve to be the US Open champion, men or women. And as you say, it'll be really interesting to see how it's set up and who's going to take advantage of. I can't. Every time I speak with you on this show, I get so excited about these things. So I promise you it won't be this long. We'll catch up again real soon because we do have a lot to discuss always. Thank you so much. So great to talk to you.
Real quick, get your early US Women's Open pick in.
Oh, how can you? You don't want to go chalk, but you know what? I'm going to go with Gino.
Ooh, I
I'm
like
going to go
it.
with Gino. I love watching all of them play, but there's something about Gino to me that I think this week with the U.S. Women's Open at Riviera and having been on that course, I think she's going to be able to take care of business. And how great would it be if it was Gino and Nelly in the final group on Sunday?
Please.
Okay, yeah, I know.
Let's manifest it.
you got to wish big. That's right. I'm putting it
Yes.
out there. Okay. Who's your pick?
Ooh, that's
Ooh.
tough. You know who's been playing some really extraordinary golf lately? Lottie Woad. I'm feeling Lottie Woad this
I know,
week.
but she has, and I hate to say it, she has so much time in front of her.
She does. She
I mean,
does.
she's unbelievable. She's for a long time, she's going to be right up there, too. That'd be a pretty good pick, too. You could probably get some pretty good odds for that since betting is legal now. I'm just saying, you know.
Indeed.
All right. Take good care, and we'll talk to you real soon. Thanks so much, Jordan.
Thank you.
Well, that was really fun. Really fun. It was great. Thank you to Joe Barrows for our discussion about top golf courses. Part two will be coming soon. And as always, thanks to Jordan Perez of No Laying Up. She does such a great job of covering women's golf, amateur golf. I loved it. Thank you to my partners who we could not do this show without them. And I'm speaking, of course, about the Woodford Club and Kentucky Golf Trail. You can go to thewoodfordclub.com and kygolftrail.com. Check out all the great things they have going on. And of course, to Lexington Parks and Rec for our five great public golf courses. Thanks to them. Have a great week. We'll be back next Sunday with more Backspin Golf. Thank you, Sean, also. It's ESPN 92.5 and 1300 AM.
Backspin Golf with Matthew Lawrence.